Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Ms. Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
And welcome to episode 63, everyone. I'm going to tell you in advance, it is going to be a jam-packed episode for you. We will be having the birthday boy himself. In fact, it's his birthday today while we're recording this. Mr. Andy Bell is going to be on with us of Erasure. Has been making music for the last 30 years, and they've got a new album coming up in May. And so Andy's going to be talking to us about that. And we will also have on with us later in this show, former WWE superstar, a five-time women's champion, Melina is going to be on with us.
All right.
Plus, I want to tell you guys that next week we will have DJ Cassidy on with us. We'll talk more about that. Anyway, Pearl, how was your weekend?
It was lovely.
Yeah?
It was away from the drag hoes.
Okay.
I got to spend some really good time with my friends, which was nice.
I saw a picture of you in the park with V and Michaela.
Yeah. Yeah. Michaela Monroe has been, like, one of my new, like, homegirls, like, to kick it with. It's really cool to be able to have, like, I kick it with Kipper, but Kipper's always, you know, working behind the
and
damn
she's MIA
machine.
Right now.
Right. Right. I still haven't talked to her since she's been back from...
Is she back?
I think so.
I don't know.
but it's nice to have another trans homegirl in the community that I can kick it with and call an actual friend that also does shows and stuff. And
yeah.
And understand, like, what it's like being a trans woman who does drag shows and stuff. It's been so lovely hanging out with her. I hung out with her and V. The weather's been nice out here in the city, you guys. It was a lovely weekend. On Sunday, I just kicked it, had a low-key day until the Kim Sims music video.
Yes, you guys. This past Sunday, we did film a music video with Jose A. Guzman Cologne and LP Vargas for the fabulous Kim Sims. She was just a delight to be around. She was just lovely to be around.
So sweet.
She was quite taken with Pearl. She sent me a private message and said that, I can't remember what Kim called Pearl, but a jewel. She's a jewel. Just Pearl is a jewel.
I am, girl. Hello, Pearl.
Oh my God. Anyway, so that was really fun. I'm looking forward to seeing the music video. One of the things that I really loved about the video shoot was that most of the people who were involved in the video shoot, not you, Tweeka Turner, we're aware that you had heard the song. But most of the people...
Yeah.
Most of the people who were involved in the video shoot had never heard the song before. You know, the song has just come out, and we opened up the video shoot for the public at the Glamazon at the cafe, had stayed over to film the shoot and whatever, because it was fun. Who doesn't want to be in a music video, right? So we ended up playing the song probably like 6 times in a row so that we could shoot, you know, pieces of the music video for it. And by the end, a lot of people who had never heard her song, Turn It Up, which we brought to you guys a few weeks ago here on the show, left not only loving Kim because she's got such great positive energy and she's so sweet, mm-hmm. but they ended up really liking the song. So it bodes well for her. Of course, I made that exact comment, you guys, because LP Vargas tagged a whole bunch of us on Facebook and thanked us for coming out. And it was like, I said that exact same thing. Like, nobody had heard the song, really, and... Tweeka Turner's like, oh, I heard it, girl, and I remixed it, too. Oh, God. Bitch, fucking have a seat. Jesus Christ. Why you gotta fucking... Oh, Lord. I kept it under my hat for a while, but she's just doing too much. I blocked her years ago on Facebook for this very fucking reason. Thread hijacking. You'd post something on Facebook and, like, a lot of people would comment or a lot of people would be tagged. And this was years ago. And she'd be like, oh, that reminds me of my music video for Space Tranny. And then she would, like, put a link to it in there. And it was just, like, enough, bitch. Like, God.
The triery.
Yeah. Like, the problem is I want to like her. Like, I like him. Well, like, but I want to, like... be nicer or whatever in that relationship, but some people make it really fucking tough. They make it real damn tough. You know? And this was the other thing, okay? Like, since I'm spilling the tea about this fucking situation and I don't give a goddamn.
Let's do it, girl.
I think there are some people who may be so annoying they don't even know that they're being annoying. But at the same time, I think that there are certain people who know exactly what they're doing, and I think this situation falls into that. So,
right,
she's aware because I've told her so many times that she did this. She did it on my personal page. That's why she's not my friend on Facebook. So I was walking down Castro Street to go home after the video shoot. I'd gotten out of drag and said my goodbyes to everybody. And I was like the last one out of the club because I had to get all the performers out.
Uh-huh.
So I am walking to the street and I happen to see Tweeka and Sergio Fadez. What's Sergio's last name? Latino with the cute flower tattoos on his chest, always posting selfies.
Loves, is he the bartender?
Loves Lexi. I don't. Anyway, I saw Sergio. It doesn't matter what his last name is. And Tweeka and Sergio were talking, and they had another guy with them. His name was Josh. I struck up a conversation with them. I was like, wasn't that a fun shoot, Tweeka? Whatever. We talked a little bit, and then Sergio was like, oh my God, Pollo, and like. So we were walking down the block. Like, now, mind you, I did not try to, like, invade their situation. I passed them on the street. The people that she was with were like, oh, my God, to me.
Uh-huh.
And we stopped. And then I made a comment, just a very, like the one guy who I did not know was just, like, completely quiet the whole time. And I said to him, like, well, aren't you just so cute? Or, like, aren't you so handsome? And, oh, Sergio goes... he's always so quiet. And I said, somebody who's quiet and handsome is a good thing to have around.
Uh-huh.
It was just like a
little sidebar.
Little sidebar, just like a nice comment. It wasn't like flirting or whatever.
Right.
But clearly Tweeka was like interested in the person because she was like, oh, it's so nice that you like black men, blah, blah, blah. And like,
oh,
you
know, my like, God.
You have African Americans who come to your show. Do you ever hook up? And I was just like, I wasn't.
What?
It was just one of those things that you say to sort of like cock block somebody. You know
girl,
what I mean?
That's annoying. You have African Americans that come to your show. Do you hook up?
Well, I mean, what the message that she was directing to this third party was like, Pollo tends to go out with black guys or whatever. You know what I mean? It's a subliminal cock block thing.
Girl, but I can't. If my lashes wasn't fucking with my left eye, I would eye roll so hard right now.
But the thing was, like, I wasn't even trying to pick him up, Tweeka. I was trying to, in fact, I was trying to get the fuck away from you because, as was seen by the fact that I made a mad dash for the bus. Girl, like, I hope it happened for you, but it irritated the fuck out of me. So, anyway,
I do love that whenever Tweeka mentions that you're into black men, it's always some ordeal between you two. The last time you guys had that was when I was doing her show still, and that guy, who was it that was?
But do you remember why is it an ordeal? Yes. Because it's always when I'm being flirty or being even remotely nice to another guy. And it was like some situation when we were in the studio at House of Pride, and it was you guys were doing that thing, and I was like flirting with some guy, and then Tweeka immediately brought up, oh, well, he's into black guys, she's into black guys. And it's just like,
right.
I'm like, we get it, Tweeka. God damn, insecure much? Fuck. But it's like...
I live.
it's one of those things where it's like, what was the fucking point of that? Like, it made my head want to, like, at the time I was just like, I was just, could not even believe it because it's,
wow.
It's like, it's just an ongoing thing with her. And it was like, I legit, all I said to him was like, having a handsome, quiet guy around is a real valuable thing sometimes. And it was that simple. And then she's all like, girl, that's all it took. In case you haven't figured it out, Tweeka apparently, I mean, like, every guy that ever tweaked, I've known that Tweeka's gone out with all been Latino, so apparently she was, like, hot to trot for homie. I hope she got fucking...
From homie.
I hope she got to first base or whatever after all that. God damn, she put forth the effort. At least kiss the bitch.
She's stinking.
Well.
Anyway, it was... What I will tell you the saddest part was, because I think that Tweeka is a really talented music producer and remixer. But, like, I think that quite often she just gets too fucking threatened. You know what I mean? Like, in, like,
oh, this, over anything, girl. Like,
it's
anything.
Yeah, it's like everything threatens her in some way. Like, somebody's going to take something from her, or she's not going to get something she wants. And I'm like, girl, I didn't want the man. Right. Like, I didn't want the man then, or that the time before, or whatever. And, like, you know, I think you're talented, and I, you know, but, like, good God, calm down, bitch. Have a seat.
Right.
So, girl, that really came up out of me. I just got possessed.
I love it, girl. But, I love it.
Do you want to hear something fucked up, Pearl? So last night, after I post, you guys, I made a Facebook post on Facebook, and then all of a sudden, like a little while later, a co-producer and co-host of a wildly, wildly popular gay podcast left a rather shady comment on one of our posts about being number one in the in gay lesbian.
I saw that shit. I didn't know if that was shade or what the fuck that was. It was really like, it was interesting. I was gonna say something, but I was like, I'm just gonna sit this one out.
Well, the thing is, and I'm not gonna name them, and I'm not gonna like name him. But
who is? Well, you can tell me later.
Yeah, but I'll tell you later. But you guys, this is the thing. It was just so out of left
field. Weird.
It was out
of left field.
And honest to God, I didn't recognize the guy's name because the podcast duo that he's involved with, he's not the one anybody knows. It's the other one.
Okay.
So he's the Andrew Ridgely to somebody else's George Michael. And if you get that reference, you're old, but you'll know what I mean. It means right. that one of them is well known for the group and the other one's just like along for the
I
ride.
I think everyone
bitch.
Knows who George Michael is. I don't know who the
exactly.
other person is. Yeah.
He's the Dave Stewart to the Annie Lennox.
Right.
He is the Farrah to the Beyonce. So anyway.
Oh my goodness.
But the thing was like,
what was that about though?
Okay. So this is how I handle situations, you guys. I sent him a private message, and I said to him, you know, I'm curious what that's about. Like, what was your comment about? Because I may be misinterpreting it, but it seemed condescending.
Yeah.
And then he...
I thought it was shady, too. I really did.
Right. Well, let me tell you. So, the conversation went as follows.
Oh, God, there was a wow!
Hello, so-and-so. Congrats on the continued success of your podcast. Your success is certainly an inspiration to all LGBT podcasters and decidedly a goal most work toward. That said, out of sheer curiosity, what was your intended purpose of the Facebook comment? To the best of my knowledge, we are not even available on the same platforms. Your podcast is not even available on the same platform I was quoting our rankings for, so it caught me a bit off guard.
Right.
So in other words, like in a very pleasant way, like what are you saying? Then this response, I saw your update about somebody seeking attention, so I thought I'd troll you. That being said, the category should be LGBT and not gay lesbian. Talk to your service providers. P.S. I was also trying to figure out who you were talking about in the post, and that's why I was looking at your feed.
What?
So his complaint is that our category that we're listed as should be LGBTQ or whatever, not gay lesbian. Okay, well, great. I said, the decision-making of the service providers aside, which really isn't the point of my message, your comment reads unnecessarily competitive and condescending, which quite honestly confused me. It was meant to be playful, he says. Frankly, though, I'd be embarrassed to post something if that's what I was best at gay/lesbian. It seems rather exclusionary and comes off as privilege. I said, by celebrating our own success on an individual platform on our own Facebook page, we certainly aren't drawing comparisons to anyone. At worst, we draw comparisons to the other podcasts in our ratings category on Podomatic, and we generally praise and promote those shows on our own. Sidebar, shout out to Sister Indica and Sister Bang Bang, right. our competitors. We always praise you, and in fact, usually, or quite often, provide actual advertisements for your podcast in our podcast. I said, in fact, we have similarly lauded your show in the past and credited your show for bringing somebody now famous for Drag Race to a much broader audience. the response. Next, you're going to tell me you're a TERF, which I had to even look up because it's
what
fucking...
What is a TERF?
Basically, it means that you're a trans-exclusionary feminist. Means that you feel that...
Oh, God.
I appreciate the kudos. Feel free to delete it. If you were so upset, if it didn't... wasn't intended to come off as shady, you'd delete it yourself, being right. Like, oh my God. So my response was, so what I'm reading from your consistent deflection is that the perceived condescending tone of the initial message was intentional, because it's continued here. Anyway, and it just continued.
Girl, I want to see this. Let me read it.
It just continued. It was like, one of the things, it just made me mad, because he didn't even acknowledge that. He goes, it's just my sense of humor. Well, your humor sucks. My friend Beth Bicostal, who is one of the managers here at the San Francisco Eagle, said, girl, she clearly has a small dick. That's what she said.
Oh, my God. What a punk, girl.
But my thing is this. We've never, ever put ourselves in direct comparison with any other podcast, and there's a very simple reason why, you guys. I don't give a fuck what anybody else's podcast is doing.
Right.
We produce an entertaining, educational, informative podcast every single week. We bring you major celebrities. It's great that other podcasts perhaps do Drag Race girls all the time and stuff like that. We certainly welcome our friends from RuPaul's Drag Race and our favorites, and we talk about Drag Race on the air. But I would rather be part of a production that brings you Grammy Award winners, Oscar winners, Tony winners, professional athletes, professional wrestlers, people who make films, people who star in films, television stars, people with current top 10 hits, not from top 10 from who knows when they might talk to. Like, we put out a quality production, and that's exactly what ultimately I finished by saying. I said, you know what? I'm just going to continue putting together the best possible weekly production that we can, and we will continue to gain our audience one person at a time, the same way presumably your shit did 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, like, they've been doing this. They've been in the game a long time. And I would certainly never take away any of their success, but it was just a situation that was like, where did this... It was so left field.
Somebody hit it with a bus. I don't care. Anyway, next.
Yeah, it was unnecessary. And beyond that, like, if you know that you've unintentionally... Like, we talked about this last week.
Right.
You've unintentionally offended somebody. At least, like, say, you know what? Like, if you're not going to apologize, as Pearl said last week, oh, by the way, after listening back, I agree with you 100%.
Oh, now because, you agree.
No, because of the fact that when I heard it back, I thought at the time that I'd said something, and you were like, but that's not what you said. And I was like, yes, it is. But so when I listened back, I realized you were right. I actually never said initially what I didn't thought I'd said.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, but the point being...
But Pearl was right, you guys.
Pearl was right, and I said that when we posted the shit. But the thing is, like, even if you don't want to apologize,
right,
you can say, like, you know what? I actually didn't intend it to come across that way.
Right.
Which isn't an apology for what you said or done. It's just like, you know what? I didn't mean it that way. But when you say things like, it's just my sense of humor, and delete it if you want.
You're coming up with excuses.
Yeah, you're acknowledging, basically, that that's exactly what you intended it as.
I think it's okay to explain yourself, but there's no reason to come up with excuses. That's just childish. Girl.
And deflection is a real thing. I'd be embarrassed. Well, bitch, I'm not embarrassed. So
right.
I'd be embarrassed to be listed under gay and lesbian instead of something else. Well, I'm not embarrassed. This is our provider. That's what we have available to us.
Right.
Like, if people think that we're exclusionary, they should probably meet Pearl, considering she's a...
Everything that you...
Like,
you
a know. Trans woman of color. So we don't really think we exclude too much around here.
Huh. Anyway.
All right, you guys. I'm going to have to get my blood pressure back in check. We'll be back in just a minute. We're going to recap you on last week's RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes, girl.
We'll be back with more Party Foul Radio right after this.
Oh, she really came that way?
I need to
get up in this gig, girl.
My name is Alyssa Edwards, and this is Party Foul Radio.
I don't get cute. I get drop dead gorgeous.
All right, you guys, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Poyet Almar.
And I'm Pearl Teeth.
My blood pressure is back at a normal level. The tone of voice is returned to sane.
And this is when we give you our spoiler alert.
Spoiler alerts, you guys. We're about to talk about the most recent episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. If you have not seen the post-Charlie Hyde elimination episode...
then you need to fast forward about 30 minutes.
Yeah, or at least
maybe
10.
Like 10.
So, just don't do it. With that said, you guys, the most recent episode of RuPaul's Drag Race saw a shock twist ending.
Yeah, I kind of, you know.
It was a surprise ending to this episode. Was this week the Kardashian challenge?
No, that's the week. No, it was. Yes, it was.
Yeah, okay. So this week was Kardashian the musical. And
oh, girl. What I can say about this episode. Girl.
There are a couple of things of note this episode.
So many things going on this episode with...
The number one thing I will say...
Nina Bonina's breakdown, girl.
So, right. So the first thing I will say about this most recent episode, they did, of course... Was it Trinity that got to assign all the parts?
It was Alexis.
Oh, okay, yes. Alexis Michelle won a mini challenge for a selfie. Like, a selfie challenge. Which, by the way, that challenge could have been rigged as fuck because they could have just basically picked anybody because all the selfies were kind of bad. Anyway, so she wins the selfie challenge and she gets to assign the roles. Okay, so sets up Alexis Michelle to, like, put these roles together, whatever, for people. The most glaring thing about this whole challenge... That musical was dreadful.
It was awful, girl. It was a mess.
It was dreadful. And I'm not even talking about the performances. The whole thing was just kind of a mess. I didn't understand it. It was like, it was one of those things that I felt like they had written it just to be sensationalistic or something.
Right, about
the Kardashians and capitalize on the popularity of the Kardashians. Anyway, the other thing that was seriously of note for me as a viewer by watching this is how quickly... One shitty episode from a person that showcases, not on their shitty performance, but on their shitty attitude, can change my opinion of them.
Well, you know, I mean, this happened with me. I mean, with Alaska from RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars.
Right. But the difference is that we got to know Alaska. We had the opportunity to know Alaska beforehand.
That's true. Yeah.
So you're like, it's just like when your friend is a fucking bitch and you're like, okay, well.
Yeah.
But the thing was, so this was what happened, you guys. They're casting the roles, and Nina Bonina Brown...
Did not get the role she wanted.
Right. She wanted to be Black China.
And they gave it to Shea Coulee.
Right.
And out of all of the roles that they had, there was only one Black character. And there's three queens that are Black. So, girl...
Which is what Peppermint pointed out. She goes, girl, there's three Black people in the competition and one Black role. Two people are going to have to play somebody white, bitch.
Right.
Like, get over it.
Right.
But the thing was, like...
She just dragged it on, and girl, let it ruin the entire mood, and just fucked up the entire aura, I'm sure. Nobody wanted to be around that, girl. No one wants to be around that.
But the part that I thought was so ridiculous about it was, it would be one thing if she had sort of been promised a role.
Right.
And then had it taken away from her, or it had been... You know, some kind of shadiness, but she was, like, claiming shade when there was no shade. I mean, Alexis got to assign roles to, like, however many girls are still competing, and she just didn't get the role she wanted.
And you know what? I'm going to say this, and I'm going to be able to say this again later in the episode because something else happened during this episode. But even if it was shade, bitch, it's the motherfucking competition. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get whoever I think is a threat out. And girl, that means you, especially with how good you can paint and, like, the creative bullshit you be doing. I'm getting you out, boo.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think that people would consider her a threat because
I would.
She's a very diverse performer, so you don't know what you're going to get from her. And that's why I've loved her, but the thing was, she complained about it the whole time they were doing rehearsals.
The whole time, girl.
She complained about it all through the actual rehearsal with, Todrick? With Todrick Hall. And he even said later on, like...
It was hard to work with her.
It was hard to work with her because she was just, like, would shut you down and all this stuff. And ultimately, it doesn't matter what role you want, girl.
You have to deliver, girl.
This is, like, in real...
You can be playing Miss Piggy, bitch. You better do it.
I'd love to play Miss Piggy.
Here's a touch for your whip, buzzard.
I'm ready.
It's about life. Like, we all want to be one something, you know, like, we have a dream ideal of what we want to be, and sometimes that's not what you're going to get. So you better show up and do the best you can, bitch, because otherwise you will never get those other opportunities.
So, with that being said, homegirl, she ended up getting, I think, Chloe, and she...
Yes, she did.
She ended up being in the bottom three.
Thank God for her. There were two other people who, like, you know, were even worse. And unfortunately... Once again, spoiler alert, you guys. This is where we're starting to start to talk about the shit that really went down. You better go. 5, 4, 3. I'm spoiling it, bitch. The bottom two ended up being Pheromone.
Yeah.
Yes. and Cynthia Lee Fontaine.
Yep.
Her cuckoo was in hot water.
And girl, as soon as the thing is, as soon as I knew who the bottom two was, I was like, okay, so Cynthia's obviously going to win this lip sync.
Right. Well, I mean, so Cynthia got cast as Kim Kardashian,
mm-hmm.
which is...
was a mess for her, poor thing. She just can't do Kim Kardashian.
This is what I would say about a lot of these girls. Most of the people are not going to end up being an Alexis Michelle who played Kris Jenner.
Amazing job.
And was like sickening.
Right.
They're not going to be able to... Shea Coulee as Blac Chyna.
Amazing.
Slayed. But literally, those are the only two memorable performances out of like 10 or 12 girls or whatever is left. And so that means that you've got lots of other space to like fall in here. If you get to the bottom, you really
Peppermint actually did good this time too.
Right. Brittany. Peppermint as Britney Spears was good as well. So, but only a few of the girls did what I think a challenge like this calls for. If they wanted to be campy, bitch, be campy. You
right.
better, if you're a Kardashian, your ass better look like six pillows
right.
stuffed under your skirt.
Right.
Like, if you are cast as Kylie Jenner, what do you think about when you think of Kylie Jenner?
Her
lips, bitch.
Yeah.
I would have had my lips painted from literally ear to ear.
I would have had my lips painted all the way to my eyes, bitch.
It would have been like, you know, my lips would have been legitimately, I'd have looked like the fucking Joker. You know, it was like, because you, when you think about a situation like that, you have to take whatever is most notable about the person and exaggerate it. If you're Kim Kardashian, your ass is like huge. If
right.
you're Kylie Jenner, your like lips are enormous and you're doing that fucking sucking on the glass challenge every two,
right.
you know, whenever you get a chance. You know, so anyway, Cynthia and Farrah end up in the bottom two. God bless Farrah, but there is like, yet, I know that she's...
Can I just say that? It is so, I feel so, like every time she cries... I just feel so bad for her. She's like a little kid. She's like a little kid that made it on the show.
Yeah. Farrah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just feel so terrible for her when she cries because it's genuine, you know?
Yeah. I think that one of the most notable thing about Farrah that we've seen so far on the show is that she does have the capacity to be really beautiful.
Right.
You know, she has the capacity to be very beautiful. I attribute a huge part of that to the fact that simply out of drag, she has extremely soft face. She's extremely feminine looking.
And I think she's been pumped.
And I think it makes it very easy for her to accentuate and just look like a pretty girl.
Right.
But I'm not sure there's anything else going on there. So Cynthia is in some horrible floor length, like fur gown.
Right.
And Farrah is over here and they have to lip sync and... Ultimately, thank God, the first thing I said as soon as the first note of the music hits, like, Cynthia, you better come out of that dress. She can't do
right.
shit in that. So Cynthia, drops down to nothing but her cuckoo. And, like, they're lip syncing, and she's lip syncing circles around Farrah.
Right.
Like, I mean, it was not a question. And during the lip sync, you see somebody come out and whisper some shit to RuPaul. You know, hella dramatic.
Right.
All like,
I was like, y'all knew this before.
It's
right.
Like, well, you knew it, that they
right.
knew it before because you could tell by the way the other contestant came off like, yes? Oh.
Right.
Like, anyway, so hella's fucking planned out. Like, Ru's over there like, cue the assistant. Okay, bring
right.
me the package or whatever.
Right.
So as the lip sync's going on, she gets delivered some message. And like, just when she's about to render her verdict, she's... I have to leave. So she leaves dramatically or whatever. And she comes back. And as it turns out, Eureka, who broke her hoof or something a few weeks ago during
yeah,
the splits,
mm-hmm.
has been on the crutches the whole time. And, you know, I had to give her extra credit because I was like, okay, she's hurt. But the bitch is like, she even said, she goes, girl, I'm going to do what I got to do. If I have to
right.
do, like, be out there
I heard
and flat.
That. Do it.
You know what? That's exactly right. And it's especially right after seeing Charlie Hyde just give up. Like, here's Eureka.
Yeah.
Who is no small person.
Right.
Like, with a hurt leg, trying to do drag, which is not comfortable, y'all. So, I mean, she's...
And in probably her best look the entire season so far.
So, that... The baby look, or what...
It was, like, the pink.
Oh, yeah. I liked the pink. Like, the... Yeah, I liked it. So, anyway, as it turns out, after the lip sync, which would have clearly sent Farrah home, Rue says, I'm sorry, I've got some unfortunate information. The doctor has said that... Eureka, you'll need extra time to heal,
yep.
and you cannot be here with us.
Right.
But you have an open invitation to come back for season 10.
Right. So we'll see Eureka in season 10.
Presumably.
But she's been on there taking over the Drag Race Snapchats and doing videos and tutorials. And she seems really nice away from the other girls. So
right, exactly.
And you know what? Even though I did not like Eureka from this season because of her mouth, I do feel bad that this is the way she went home. Just because I know I would just be mortified, girl.
Yeah, I also gained some respect for her because, like I said, she was out there on a crutch and shit.
Right, yeah.
But she was doing what she had to do. And so, after Eureka was sent home, then Rue said, "We've suffered enough loss this episode.
Right.
You're both safe."
Right.
Which I thought was lame because I was like, I'd have still chopped Farrah, but... I would have. I'm sorry, yeah. But, like...
I mean, that goes to show that, you know, it's just obvious that Farrah is not going to win this year.
Girl, there would have to be some magic the next time she lip syncs, because if that's what you got, then...
I mean, the next week is the Snatch Game, so I don't see her doing all that well.
Oh, that dear. Either.
But did you see the Untucked?
No, girl, I need to watch the Untucked. So tell us about Untucked.
So, girl, what really works my nerves... Alexis Michelle.
Alexis Michelle's working your puss?
Of course, of course. So she talks about, like, how she helps the girls whenever she feels like they need help or whatever. And she was upset that no one pulled her aside and critiqued her about that whack-ass dress she had on with her fur coat.
Oh, well, the runway challenge was faux fur. So mm-hmm. Everybody comes down the runway, whatever. Alexis Michelle is coming off of potentially challenge-winning performance as Kris Jenner.
Right,
she slayed.
She should have been able to win this challenge. And then win this episode.
So she comes down the runway and she's got on a fur coat, but then she opens it up and it's like a dress barn outfit.
Right, it looked like she just came from the mall, girl.
Really, she did look like she. You know, and she was like, "Oh, I thought it was like Studio 54, winter, or whatever."
Never.
But it was, you know, I have no problem with that outfit, but not on the runway challenge. I have a dress like that. I wear it
that you
all
probably
the
bought.
Time.
That you probably
I sure did.
Store.
I bought Never. It from a fat horse store at the mall.
Never.
But, you know, the thing about it is, like, it's fine, like to go around or run around or do something in that. It's not a runway outfit.
Right.
And so she was upset that people didn't...
That no one else decided to pull her aside and say, you should change your dress. Bitch, like I told homegirl earlier, it's a competition. I'm not going to tell you shit about what you look like. If I think, I'm going to encourage you to come out looking busted, girl.
See, and y'all thought I was a bitch. I mean, I wouldn't do that, but this is the way I think about it. When we did the Miss Gay California pageant competing against each other
right.
a couple years ago, if you need something, if like you remember how,
yeah,
people,
that's,
like,
that's
girl,
fine.
You need bobby pins, you need hairspray, what do you need? You have,
right.
I have wig glue,
zipper,
you have like,
what?
Whatever. But I would certainly never have been like, are you sure this is what you want to wear? Because
right. Get
this, if I'd said something like that and then later on the judges liked it, then I would have been portrayed as shady as fuck to begin
right.
with.
That's right.
And, it, you know, my thought is like, when it comes to the actual runway thing, that's you being you. That's like
right.
you get to express who you are. And so
she sat there and tried to blame the other girls for her looking busted.
Mm-mm.
Girl, I'm not taking the blame for that. You're the one who went out there looking moated as hell. Sorry, girl, not sorry.
Well, I mean, the little the jacket was cute and everything, but you know, if she
did this reveal to nothing, girl.
Right? If
she, keep the jacket on.
If it had been, I think that something that would have been hot under that would have been like kind of a see-through black peekaboo dress.
Anything.
Or you know, something that was sexy. She took
right.
it off and she literally looks like, "Woo, girl, it was cold outside. I'm glad I got to the office."
Right.
Oh, girl, right. I just ran into the office because it was so cold in the parking lot.
That's exactly what it looks like.
And you guys, I really, really like her. I like her.
There's a few other people that actually really like her, too. I'm just not here for it.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, again, you have to take it with a grain of salt because she's been drawing some mild comparisons to Roxy Andrews, who I also loved. So, you know, I mean,
right.
whatever. It is what it is. But I need to catch up on The Untucked. I guess I need to sit down and watch The Untucked, girl, because that's where all the shit goes down. That's
yes, girl.
That's where Drama Llama.
Girl, Linda Evangelista, girl.
So.
Speaking of which, have you heard the song?
The Linda Evangelista. Somebody sent it to me, but I haven't heard the Linda Evangelista song.
I Live. I Live. LaGanja Estranja performed it, I think, in LA, amazing.
Which, who is it by?
Aja.
Aja, yeah.
So good.
Oh my lord. Anyway, that's our basic recap of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Right, next week, Snatch Game, it looks like Peppermint's going to be NeNe Leakes. I'm really excited for that.
Appropriate.
And, right, and then someone's going to be Madonna, and I think someone's going to be Joan Rivers.
Oh, wow. So, well, definitely, that's that. You know, that's the episode that can make or break a bitch, or, like, make somebody's career, because they could spend the rest of their career, Shangela, spend the rest of their career doing that freaking character, basically.
Right.
You know, well, I guess she didn't do Snatch Game, that is Snatch Game, but it was their comedy stand-up thing.
Well, she did comedy before the show.
Right. So, anyway, I also want to, this weekend is DragCon.
Oh, sickening.
This coming weekend is DragCon in Los Angeles, and I know that tons and tons of people will be down there. Pearl and I, not there.
I'm not going to be there.
So, actually,
we should go next year, though.
Actually, the reason that we have Melina, the professional wrestler Melina, on this episode is because she's going to be at DragCon, and we talk about that in a little bit.
So stay tuned for that.
But I just want, I would love if any of our listeners out there are going to DragCon, there is going to be a panel discussion led by Skin Wars judge Robin Slonina.
Oh, come on,
who's
Robin.
Who is a friend of the podcast. And I don't know if I should tell this or not, but she contacted me today and said that part of her discussion that she wants to present on the panel is drag queens who have been influenced and impacted in a positive way by Skin Wars. And she asked,
she's gonna mention you.
She asked if she could use a couple of my photos.
Oh, sickening.
So,
and you're not gonna go?
I'm not gonna go. I know, right?
What?
I know. Oh, Melina wanted me there. Robin Slonina wanted me there. Like, a whole bunch of people have asked if I'm going, and I can't make it out of town this weekend.
Damn.
I know. Anyway, so, you guys, if you are down at DragCon, please go see Robin Slonina at the Skin Wars panel discussion.
And tell them we said hi.
Yeah. Give her a big hug for me, you guys. Please. Oh, and if you take selfies with her, tag me in them. I love her. She went on a binge, like, she sent me a message, and then she's like, by the way, I'm going on a binge liking spree on your...
Oh, my God.
On your Instagram. So, thank you, Robin. Oh, my God. So, she's such a doll, you guys. Cannot wait for the next season of Skin Wars. By the way, have you gotten into the new TV show called Cosplay Melee?
I want to so bad. I'm going to. Don't ruin it.
The thing about Cosplay Melee is, unlike other series like Face Off and stuff like that, which, by the way, y'all... Tonight, that we're recording this Tuesday, is the Face-Off finale on Sci-Fi Network. And so
y'all better get it on demand.
Catch it on demand. So, Cosplay
Ooh, sorry, Melee. Y'all.
Thanks, Pearl. Cosplay Melee is a new series where they take cosplayers.
And oh, you know what? I have seen one episode.
Every episode is four contestants.
Yeah.
They bring four contestants together who have the same area of specialty. So, for example, like... If your specialty is video games cosplay, they'll bring you together with that. If yours is Game of Thrones, they'll bring those people together. Last week it was superheroes. They will have the cosplayers come in for a first challenge, and then, like, based on what they create for the first challenge, then three of them will continue towards the finale, and then one winner gets $10,000. I love it because it's anything that, like, kind of stirs my creativity. They're like, and also from an artistic perspective, you're getting to see how they make these crazy, cool pieces.
Right.
And, like, they share very openly, like, some of the techniques of cosplay. Like, oh, you want to make something look like leather? Well, you make it out of this foam, and then you ball up aluminum foil or whatever, and you roll it, and it makes indentations in the vinyl or whatever. And then when you paint it like a brown color, it looks like leather. Like, there's all these really freaking cool techniques. And so, it's back-to-back. It's on Sci-Fi Network. It's on at, like, 10 o'clock to 11. And then Face Off is on from 11 to 12. So, girl, between WWE, Face Off, and Cosplay Melee, bitch, I am glued to the TV for 4 hours on Tuesdays.
I heard that.
So, guys, go check it out. I'm trying to get some of the people from Cosplay Melee on here, too. So,
that'd be amazing.
Yeah, there's this... one of the judges... goes by, her name is Vamp, and she's Gorge, and I'm trying to get her on. And damn it, Mackenzie Westmore, come on too. I'm like, it's the face-off finale and we still haven't got to talk to you. How rude.
Triary.
So, all right, you guys, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have our first recorded interview with Melina, WWE Superstar, three-time Women's Champion and two-times Divas Champion, who will be coming to DragCon this weekend. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I'm Poyet Omar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
Hallelujah, this is Shangela, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl, honey. Hallelujah.
Clock the bag.
Clock the bag.
Clock the shoe.
Clock the shoe.
Now punch the clock. It's time to work.
Hey, Melina.
Oh, yay! Hi.
How are you?
Hi. I'm good. Other than watching the Netflix from 13 Reasons Why, I was like, I had to watch it and finish watching these TV episodes. I started crying. I was like, oh my God.
So, is that series actually good enough to make a girl cry?
Oh my gosh, it's intense. It's so intense. Like, it touches all the things that people don't talk about. Yet they talk about on there, like with the suicide and sexual assault and all this stuff. I'm like, oh my God. I started crying, all the like rumors and internet like bullying and all this stuff. I'm like, oh my God. I'm so happy that they created this because it needed to be talked about. I just want to avoid it. I'm like, poor thing.
I mean, it's an intense topic because you being a public figure, for example, people take a license to say mean things all the time about you on the internet if they choose to, like there's no ramifications of it, but it doesn't matter who you are, like hateful things make you feel whatever way, you know, emotional or hurtful.
Yeah. They take away everybody's, being as a person, like it takes away, people, whoever do those, the shaming is taking away their humanity as well as taking away people's sense of self and how they see themselves or how comfortable they are or feeling safe. Like, it's so many things that happen to a person when you start bullying and saying all this stuff, but you don't think that, you don't see a person or they don't see people as people.
Right.
And that's sad. It's so terrible. I wish none of these things on anybody, and I watched that show. And I was like, that was my life as an adult. Like, that's a sad thing. Like, I can only imagine what kids go through when they go through that. Because I know when I, like, as an adult, like, now that I'm, like, reaching 40, I have more of an awareness of all these things and better ways of coping through it. But maybe it's because I went through all that stuff that I had to deal with how to cope with things. But, I couldn't, in my 20s, I couldn't really see clearly and be as articulate and process stuff as much, even though I felt like I was great at seeing things, but obviously I wasn't because I didn't know how to handle stuff. So I could only imagine if it happened to me in my teens, how much more insane I would, like, of emotions and what I would go through. Like, if I couldn't do it in my 20s, I could only imagine how a teenager would go through it. It's so painful. It took me a while to watch the show because I thought, oh, I don't want to be sad. I just want to be happy. But when I finally watched it, then it's like, no, that's probably why people don't want to talk about certain situations because they don't want to feel uncomfortable. They don't want to deal with it. And this should be like a learning lesson on everybody, even kids like in high school. You should all watch this just so then you can know, hey, you have to accept it. This is what's out there. This is what people go through. And let's get over all the uncomfortable stuff now. And that's what we should be teaching people, that this is life. Life isn't always happy. Life isn't always that everyone treats everybody great, as much as I wish people would, and they should. But we should prepare everybody for what reality is.
It really made me curious. You said that you went through this kind of bullying as an adult, and I was wondering what incidences or experiences specifically you were talking about. That sounds intense.
Oh, for me, like, I guess this is the process. Like, I'm going to definitely write stuff in the next year, just like little blogs, because it was a process in wrestling of trying to understand why people are the way they are. Because I came from, say, the most I thought in my life was trying to get out of, like, gang scenario. Like, my parents raised us as teen parents, wanting better than what they had because they were teens having, like, their children having children. and they wanted a better life for us, that we wouldn't have to go through that, and that we would wait till we're married and all this other stuff. They just wanted a better life, especially like my dad coming from Mexico, and, you know, he wanted a better life. That's why he came to the United States, for a better life, even as a kid. So it's like all these things that my parents wanted for their kids, which every parent does. I thought that was the worst of what I had to go through, was people not looking at me as a human being because of my race, but then, like, gangs and stuff like that. We had to go from, like, the poor end of, like, Los Angeles and all of these other places to get us out of there. And some of my cousins were part of gangs and everything, so it's kind of like, okay, I knew what people went through. I thought I was tossed and all this stuff, but I had to, like, follow a certain route to honor my parents and what they wanted to achieve. And I wanted to achieve all my dreams, because that's what my, like, every generation wanted for us. So it's like, that was my mission. And I thought, like, my family was such supportive people. Like, family, when especially in, like, Latin culture, it's like we have each other's back. We support each other. Even though we don't, like, always agree with everybody's decisions, but we're there for each other for life. And then when I had to be out on my own, especially as a female, too, I wasn't aware of what, like, everybody else's intentions. I guess in my mind, if I'm away from the ghetto and all this stuff, it's kind of like there's promise. I was not aware of so many things, and I was very naive, as much as I thought I was. And I wasn't prepared for the wrestling world, which just sounds so stupid. I think that's part of another reason why I always, like, put a lot on myself, because it sounds so stupid that this should be an environment that was as bad as it seems. And I can't fault the environment. It's just whatever happened, it was probably like the perfect storm. I can't, like, say about anybody else's experience. My experience was just the perfect storm. And I won't say everything that's, you know, in detail, because it's for me that I'm not ready yet. But I feel like I experienced the rumors. I experienced that I was a good person that had so much hope, and I wanted to be a role model and all this stuff. And a series of events took it away from me, and I had to deal with the rumors of how I'm a slut because of a character that wore, like, dressed a certain way, or because she was bitchy, and I didn't know how to cope with that. Even though I knew it was just a character, it seemed like the whole entire world saw me as that character, and I didn't know how to deal with it. Even though I'm proud of that character, like, in that point in time and now, I'm proud of the character that was, because it was just a character, and she was great at being a bitch. But when it came to personal life, it seemed like everybody around me thought that that's who I was, even though it wasn't, so I felt so invisible.
Wow.
And it's just the way I process things, you know? Everyone kept telling me, well, you just need a thicker skin. No, I know how strong I am. Just because I feel, just because I, you know, I react in a human way. Like, I'm emotional. Like, I can't help it. Whatever is on my mind or on my heart, it's on my sleeve.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And there shouldn't be anything wrong with that. For anybody to say, oh, toughen up. I'm a tough person. I'm tough when it comes to taking things physically, like in wrestling and stuff like that, and emotionally. But when it comes to acknowledging true feelings, no one should ever be able to say, like, no one should tell you to hide that and, oh, just get over it. No, we're supposed to acknowledge it and talk about it. Being tough and to overcome things, I get that, but it's just to kind of muscle stuff and just let it, just put it in a back burner and just be like, okay, we're going to hide that feeling. At some point, it's gonna come up, and it's probably going to end up being, the emotions are going to be worse than ever. So it's pretty strange how all these things affected me, and I didn't know how to deal with it then, because I needed to focus on work. I needed to, like, I want to keep my job, but then I needed to get along with all these people, and being a shy person is just very difficult. That's the reason why I dropped off the face of the earth of wrestling, having to deal with everything to understand it. But I talk to people now, and they say, you know, I didn't know you went through that. They thought I was, like, so confident, and I knew this, and I was doing all this awesome stuff on stage, that they didn't realize that I was going through so much loneliness and hurt backstage. It was like high school. I feel like high school was awesome for me. Not like I did a lot of awesome things. Like, I wanted to get out of high school and be out in the real world and do stuff that mattered. And I couldn't wait for that. And I felt like that was going to be the worst behind me, like that like era of high schoolness. And then when I go into WWE, oh, I shouldn't say that. Just when I got it, because I don't want to put any fault on anything. It's nobody's fault. It's just, you know, the perfect storm. It just happened to me. And I feel like a lot of people's experiences are all different. Some people have great experiences. They have the time of their life, and I just didn't get to have that.
I think that...
I love wrestling.
Yeah, I think that the characters men portray in professional wrestling probably elicit a different kind of audience response than the characters women portray, because, you know, men are portrayed as competitive and tough and, you know, one-upsmanship, and the female characters tend to be portrayed as manipulative, bitchy, slutty, and I think that it elicits a different kind of response from the audience when they think that that's who you are. I mean, I know that one of your contemporaries was Trish Stratus, and she and I talked a while back, and she, you know, people believed that she was that kind of sleep around, sleep your way to the top. They believed that story.
That's why I'm intrigued, because I never thought, I've never seen that, or I never heard anybody say that, so it's surprising. Like, to me, my brother was telling me the other day, he's like, how is it that, and this is, like, really everybody's sexual experiences is nobody's business. But mine was just kind of like, I had actual relationships, because I wished, like, if I could tell my story about how my family brought us up and everything, like, in my mind, my first, like, experiences didn't work out, then you're like, okay, well, you try again to find love. And if I couldn't make it, like, if it didn't work, then that's not on any of our faults, it just didn't work. But in wrestling, it's kind of like, I got shamed for getting another boyfriend, even though, and I was supposed to be perfect when there's other girls out there who slept with everybody. And if they did, that's on them. Like, it's none of anybody's business, that's on them. But I got shamed for having relationships. And that was just me trying to find love, because I'm a hopeless romantic, and I believe in, like, I would love to have one person for the rest of my life. And people shame women, yet you see all these guys who they could do whatever they want. And that's not even just in wrestling. This is in life in general.
Right. It's about conquest.
Like what you were saying about guys will have a certain look, and if they, women are looked at as manipulative and all this stuff, that's just across the board. This is the way women get seen now, just in general.
I saw a series of tweets, for example, about the current WWE product, where Alicia Fox's character is being portrayed as, like, jumping from man to man. And people were responding really negatively to her being portrayed as, quote, a slut. It's just a wrestling character. That's not who she is in real life. That's no more who she is than anybody that you would know on a soap opera on ABC is really the character who's sleeping around.
Yeah. No, you're right in that aspect, because it's true. If you were to watch it on any other TV show, you wouldn't come to all these conclusions. Like, you wouldn't say it. Like, people wouldn't be talking about it as if it's real. But for some reason in wrestling, people act like these scenarios, they're real. And it's not. They're actors. Even though they're wrestling, even though it seems like a different... Because it's a different environment, it's not on a set. It's in an open arena that it changes people's perspective and makes people believe that there's truth to it. This is the way it really is. When it's not, she's playing a character. That's so insane. I know, because I haven't followed and I feel bad, but but that's such a horrible thing. I hope she's able to handle that. That's so tough. But why do people do stuff like that? I mean, they were so insane. I've also seen tweets about people say not appreciating the girls nowadays, how they suck and this and that. And I'm thinking, wow, this is like the best it's ever been. This is everything we've asked for and fought for and they're getting the opportunities and they have incredible athletic women, why, like, is there no era where people just appreciate what they have?
Well, I do think that the women now are overall getting a tremendous amount of respect from the public, and it's because of the fact that many of you paved the way. You know, I pray that we never see the women today in bra and panty matches like you had to endure early in your career and things like that. They now get to main event each week's episodes of WWE products. They're getting to put on 10 or 15 minute matches. They've got incredible storylines that involve psychology as well as athleticism. It's a very different era, and I think that it's fantastic to see people who were your contemporaries, like Mickey James, get to come back and enjoy and enjoy the success now that, you know, while you guys were incredible in your area, you did not have the opportunity to put on some of the athletic displays that you might have been able to.
During my time, I kind of felt, or after, like, I left, I always thought about, like, what could have been and what I wish I could have done, and I had all these ideas of, you know, you want to have this amazing WrestleMania match and this amazing storyline, but at the same time, I knew these are things that were beyond my control, and I couldn't put that on myself, that it was my fault that I couldn't do it. It's really disappointing, but at the same time, it's life. It's part of a life I chose, and I knew that as I look back, instead of thinking of all the things I could have done, if only this, if only that, I was just really happy and proud of what I did achieve. And in a time where they told me I would never be a wrestler, or that I was just a novelty or no one will take me seriously, like, people would say so many negative things, or that I wouldn't have opportunity because I'm Hispanic, because they would only push blonde-haired, blue-eyed girls. I did all these things that they told me I couldn't do. And I'm so grateful, because part of it was because my character and my work was undeniable. And the other part was that they did allow me to do this. They did, and I'm very grateful for it. So all the little small victories that I had, to me, even though, yeah, maybe I had to do a bra and panties match, I had to do a pudding match, was really ridiculous. But at the same time, it's like, at least I can look back and laugh at it. It was an experience, and it's like, oh, I can laugh, like, yep, we did that. I'm very happy for what I did get to do, because I could only imagine if I wasn't able to follow my dreams and see what could have happened. At least I was able to do something, because for some people, they never were even able to get that. So I'm grateful for the small victories.
I don't want you to make yourself sound like you didn't accomplish anything. Like, three-time women's champion, like, two-time divas champion.
What's weird is that it felt like that. It felt like, what did I do? And then now being out of it, because especially when it seemed like the whole world hated me, and I was this big villain, and, you know, I was going through my stuff, because it all affected me. I'm such a, like, tender-hearted person that it all did affect me, and it seemed like within it, people would put me down and say how worthless I am, and then when I get people hating me outside because of the character, it felt like I was worthless. I look back now, and then after the fact, after I left, people started watching YouTube videos and telling me how much I meant to them. And it changed that changed me. It's like, oh, I'm glad that it helped somebody, that even though the character was bitchy, the girls could be strong. It makes me happy.
Yeah, and you had incredible success. 3 times women's champion, 2-time divas champion. I mean, 5 championship runs in WWE. That is something very much to be happy about. Plus all of the work that you did with Eminem.
I'm very fortunate. People think, like, oh, if you could have had this, if you could have done that. I'm like, yeah, I could have, would have, should have, but I was very fortunate for all the opportunities I had. Like, I got to work with, you know, Mick Foley and Ric Flair, and to me the best one was Eddie Guerrero. You know, how lucky was I? So I'm, like, so fortunate and happy, and then being able to have a match with Trish and everything, like, as kid in the candy store.
Right. And you had an extended, you know, storyline with Beth Phoenix, who just went into the Hall of Fame. How did that feel for you to see one of your old cohorts going into the Hall of Fame?
Oh, it's beautiful and amazing. It's so awesome. And I think that she really, of course, she knows that as Polaroid, like, she deserves it, and that she should just, you know, and it was beautiful to see, like, her speech and everything. It was just gorgeous. I'm such a person. What was difficult for me to see was that, you know, there's no rhyme or reason. I understand why things happen the way they did happen, but I just wish that there was there's more than just one woman each year. Like, say, if we had, like, a current or a recent female wrestler that has the honor to be in the Hall of Fame, you should also pick one that was in history. And I guess that's just me, because I'm not great at history, but I'm one that honors history and people who've paved the way. So it's weird for me to hear people saying that we paved the way. I'm like, yeah, but that was just a couple years ago. It just seems, even though it's like maybe 5 or 6 years ago, it's still recent to me. And for me, 20 years ago is what we should honor, because it was hard for me in my era. I couldn't imagine what women went through in their era. So I wish we could give more credit to those women they were the only girls. If we're struggling as it is in this generation, they went through so much more.
Every generation, I think, experiences things that previous generations haven't experienced. While things across the board are incredibly better for female athletes in the WWE and other professional wrestling products now we're seeing an entire group of women whose privacy has been invaded by people stealing photos and hacking their phones. I mean, like, every generation has something. It feels like nobody is immune.
That's true. That's very true. That is so really true. But I keep thinking, like, and it's not, I hope you don't take it as, I'm so proud of Beth. I'm just very, very proud of Beth. I love her. She's achieved so much and gone through so much. And a lot of people, like, everybody does. So I'm proud of everything that she's accomplished, and she deserves so much, and she deserves what she had and then some. I think, like, there should be more stories told. I wish everyone could hear everybody's stories to see how amazing they all are and how amazing Beth is. But I feel my heart hurts for people that are, like, unsung heroes, you know?
Of course.
That these women. And I guess I think about that. I'm one of those weird people, like, when somebody passes, I mourn them, and I want to, like, I need to hear their whole entire story, because people need to know how they live. And I'm just people's lives matter to me, and I just keep thinking. And I guess another thing, it's kind of weird to hear somebody in my generation already be at that level, because it's like, but we're still, this is something that's when you're older. So, like, no, we're still kids.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
I would have to say to you that I slightly agree. When they announced Beth, I was a little surprised. Not to say that she hasn't had tremendous accomplishments, but my first thought was, well, she's still of the age where if she chose to, she could still be actively competing. You know, Fabulous Moolah was wrestling until she was 300 years old or whatever.
Oh, bless her. It's true.
So.
Oh, my goodness. I love him.
I was really excited a while back when you popped up on Lucha Underground. I love Lucha Underground. And I was wondering, you know, what it was that kept you from pursuing more with Lucha Underground. That's such an incredible product. And being Latina, I would think that you would want to be part of it, because
this is what's funny. Like, is the rumor is that I didn't want to do it?
I don't
even know what's going on.
Yeah, I didn't know what the rumors were. Like, I just know that you came for an episode and I didn't see you again. So I was just curious, you know, from your perspective.
I didn't go back into wrestling at all. Like, when I disappeared, I just wanted to stay off the grid, and I did not want to do it. And I was convinced to. It's like the only time I actually, they were trying to convince me up until the taping. It's like the day of taping, I agreed to it. And that's how much I did not want to go back into wrestling. And then when they convinced me to do it on that day, I remembered how much I loved it. Like, there's good parts to this. Like, I know I hold on to bad stuff, and I was trying to recover from traumas, but it I missed it. This was the feeling I got from it was like, yeah, this is what I love so much about wrestling, and I miss so much of it. And I love the artwork. I love being able to portray characters that only I can. And it was such a great feeling, and the fans were so supportive that it put me in that mood, like, yes, we can do this. And so they didn't know if they were going to come back for another season. So we waited the whole entire summer in hopes that there would be another season so then we could start this back up. But they ultimately told my ex, we just don't want to repeat what they did in WWE.
Tell me about the fact that you're going to DragCon. I mean, obviously, as a drag queen, I'm excited that you'll be there with the girls. So what made you decide to do that?
I know. I'm so excited, too. Like, I should have tweeted more about it. Kind of like, all this stuff is going on, and I want to tweet it up so much this week. But I'm so excited because, for one, mostly for myself, it's because, like, as a fan, like, I want to see everything, and I want to see everybody's makeup and fashion. I just imagine it being so beautiful. Like, everywhere you turn, everybody's looking gorgeous. I cannot wait to see. And then I'm like, oh yeah, I'm there too.
Well,
but I'm so excited to see everything.
I've always said that there is a huge correlation between drag and pro wrestling. I mean, we're all out there.
Really?
Yeah, don't you? I think we're all out there portraying a character that we're not. When I was a little boy growing up, like, I think that the first piece of drag I wanted to own was like a Ric Flair robe. You know what I mean?
Yes. Oh my goodness. But then it's just the way it comes out, too. It's just the look of it, and then, you want to be able to come out and look, like, have that feeling as if you are, like, intense the way Ridiculous came out. He knew he was awesome. He knew, like, his shit's instinct.
Yep, exactly.
And you want that look and then that feeling when you, like, put something like that on. Oh, I love dressing up. Like, if I could, I would just wear, I'd look at stuff like, have you seen Once Upon a Time?
Uh-huh.
The Evil Queen. That's
yeah.
What I feel like when her outfit, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I would love to just like put one of those dresses on and be like, yes.
Many drag queens I know actually look to her character on TV as like, okay, this is what I want to look like, or this is what I want to be like.
Oh, see? Awesome taste. That's why I love it. I want to be able to do stuff like that. I think that's what, you're right, the way you said that about wrestling. Because I think whenever I had some kind of outfit, the way I wanted to walk down that ramp and all this stuff, I just wish I could walk on a runway and then be like that.
Well,
that would be an amazing feeling.
Well, I saw your custom-made Wonder Woman outfit. I was highly impressed.
Oh, yeah, which one? The black and white one? The evil one?
The traditional Wonder Woman outfit that you have, the red and blue. So.
Oh, the Linda Carter one?
Yeah.
I love that one. I'm such a huge fan of Linda Carter.
Me too. I grew up loving Linda Carter. I mean, probably for you it was like even more intense because, you know, she's Mexican-American, so you could probably like be like, oh my God.
Yes. The sad thing is like when I was younger... This looks weird. I can only imagine when it went for my family, but say even then, it seemed like there was race. Like, there is now still, but then it kind of seemed like it was not cool to be any ethnicity. So when you see somebody who had dark hair, and then I didn't see anybody like me, so I didn't know how I fit in. And I was probably 7 or even younger at the time, that I didn't understand why my Barbies didn't look like me. I had to get those Cabbage Patch Kids to special order, like, dark-haired ones. But it seemed like there was nothing that looked like me. And then when I saw Linda Carter, it was like, wow, she has dark hair, too. So I looked up to her because she, you know, she's being a Hispanic woman, like, represented me, that what I could be, what I can do. And it's just an amazing thing. And then seeing how she is, oh, my, did you know she does, she's lounge singing?
Oh my God, I've met her and I've seen her live and I've interviewed her. Yeah. So
she's amazing. I found out about it a couple years ago. So then when I went, oh, it was just like a dream. My God, I love her.
And
that smile.
And she's like 60 and so gorgeous, like ridiculous beautiful.
I know. Just like back in the day. She still kept that beauty. I swear, I feel like her eyes when she looks at people and smiles. There should be like like one of those, the twinkle in her eye, and then her teeth, she smiles, like Colgate style. Like,
yep. Ting! And, you know, I love the fact that she is so supportive of the LGBT community. You know what I mean? Like, she's aware that that her character on television really impacted the gay and lesbian community, and she has embraced that. And I think that that's so special. I think that that makes, you know, I would have hated to find out after adoring and idolizing her as a child that that wasn't the case, you know?
Yeah, that would be heartbreaking. You're like, what? But then that's what I think. When I met her, she was so sweet. It's kind of like if she wasn't that way, that image would totally just fall apart, and then like a sense of self of who I was would totally like collapse. So it's like it was great to see that she is just an amazing person. I hope it didn't seem that I was trying to like dismiss the LGBT community when you mentioned it with Linda Carter. I just actually do fangirl as a fan, like just as like humanistic people. That I think like it's a great thing that she does what she does. I feel like as a community, like as in the whole entire world, we should all come in and do our part in embracing everybody in all aspects of life, whether no matter race, gender. What we want to dress as. Like, there's so many different, I don't know how to describe it, because I'm still, in my mind, it's kind of hard growing up in the past of how people didn't acknowledge anything, and then all of a sudden we need to accept everything. Like, we really do. It's a thing that we need to accept human beings as human beings instead of what they listen to, what they wear, what they like, what their interests are. It's like there's so many things that we need to accept people as just people and how we treat each other, instead of picking apart what we do, like in the privacy of our own home or what we drive. Like, it's just insane that we ridicule each other for all these reasons that really, in the grand scheme of things, has nothing to do with who we are as people. I mean, it's everything. It's like everything we are, like all the things we do and like and the way we were born and all this stuff. But at the same time, it's kind of like, it's everything and it's nothing at the same time. As long as we treat each other well and we're good to each other and we support each other, that should be all that matters. And I have like very strong opinions when it comes to how we treat each other. Like the LGBT community, in my mind, if it wasn't for my friends in the community, I feel like I probably would have fallen in the bigger pool of depression than I did before, because they were very supportive. Like, they accepted me when nobody else did. And I have really high regards in that in their community, and they have I have their back forever, because everybody should be seen as people. It's insane to me the bad things that happen in the world, and it shouldn't even be a thing.
Yeah,
I just wanted to let you know that, like when you're saying that Linda Carter thing, I wasn't dismissing it at all.
No, I
didn't come across that way.
No, you know what? And I didn't think that at all. I think it's beautiful, and I think it's true, because I 100% believe that all of the things that, you know, compose us as people make us who we are. But at the same time, like, when it comes down to it, shouldn't people be judged based on the way they treat others more so than particularities of whether they're a certain ethnicity or race or a certain gender identity or sexuality? Like, does that play into how they interact with you? Because I've always taken it that I can only judge people based on their actions towards me. You know, if they're, if they treat me well, then I need to treat them well.
Exactly. To me, like, everybody who's been nice and good to me, like, that's all that matters. Like, that's what makes friends and family. And then just because you don't understand something or you don't agree with something, like, it's so weird. Like, I kind of think even, like, my brother, when it comes to, like, baseball team, he's so, like, he loves his baseball team. And I'm sorry to, like, compare it to something small like that, but it's just, to me, I compare small things to big things, just because if we disagree and we hate people for small things, you can understand the scope of the bigger situations. So it's kind of like, if we're the type of people or society where we fault people for liking a different baseball team or something like that, how are we, like, that, I don't understand how we could be so judgmental over stupid little things like that. When it comes to sexuality and all this stuff, it's like, why do we shouldn't judge, like, that's harder on people. If it hurts people when it comes to baseball teams or football teams, can you imagine when something that has to do with your identity and who you are, like things that you can't control that has nothing to do with who you are as the way you treat people? That's just weird. It's wrong to me. And I think we need to, I wish our society would be able to explain that to kids when they're in school, that this is not something to be able to hurt other people and to judge them or to ridicule them and treat them like they're garbage or they're less than what they're worth. It's so strange to me that we don't teach, and it shouldn't, this is a sad thing, like, I guess we think that parents should teach their kids how to conduct themselves towards other people, like, do unto them as you want them to do unto you, but we're obviously not doing that. Parents are not doing that. Their fears or whatever it is that's going on in their mind, they're continuing the cycle. When it should be, we should be just embracing each other and supporting each other.
Yeah.
Weird, no matter what it is. I'm sorry to keep rambling. I didn't intend to do that. I'm like, what's wrong with the world?
No, I mean, I agree with you. I think that what you're relating is that, you know, so many things that are common sense are highly uncommon. And I think that you can only expect people to pass on to their children what it is that they have themselves. And if they don't have tolerance or patience or an open mind or an understanding that the world is not about one type of person, place, or thing, they can't possibly pass that on to their children. You know, it's like when you don't have a global view of life, then you can't pass that on. I'm very fortunate that I came from a family where my mother taught us very early on that people should be respected, number one, and that people should be judged based on their actions to you, not on what they might do any other place. It's, you know, so, and that's because my mom herself is incredibly embracing and wonderful.
See, and to me, like, what I admire you about you right now is that you were very articulate in the way you said that, and I wish, like, I'm still trying to piece together how to say certain things. Like, I'm not a perfect human being, and I wish I could be like very great in, when it comes to verbalizing things, but I'm not. And when you said all that, I'm like, yeah, that's exactly the way, like, you said it so perfectly. I'm like, oh, boy, it was amazing.
Well,
and you had such a wonderful mom. Like, if only everybody, and it also depends on how she was raised too, that maybe they were able to articulate and tell her all these things because of what they've seen and gone through. And that's what we need to do. We need to pass on messages and learn to communicate. I used to be super, super shy, so I wasn't really great at communicating. It was expressive in different ways, but not when it came to talking. And it was a skill that I wanted to learn. And I've broken out of that, and I'm better at it. I'm not perfect, but I'm better at it. And I think that everybody can be. Ideally, hopefully, if we're on this earth for a long time till we're old and gray, and if we are on this earth for that long, why not improve ourselves as, you know, a species to be able to be better to each other and to learn about each other and listen to each other's stories?
Yep.
The next generation would be better for it.
I absolutely think so. And I that's my optimism. I hope that we're doing that. I think that as adults, we have the opportunity to pass those kind of values on to younger people. And, you know, one child at a time, the world will be a different place, I think. Hopefully.
Yeah, that's what I keep thinking. Hopefully, like, enough people's lives are touched so then they could just pass it on to the next generation until it's so much better. That's the dream.
It is the dream. Melina, thank you for talking today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for talking to me. Like, I just, watching that TV show just, like, got me all emotional. I'm so sorry. Like, thank you for being such a sweet person and being so understanding to everything. That means so much. He's like, no, it's supposed to talk about DragCon. Super excited to go as a fan. Like, seriously, you have no idea. Kind of like, I just want to be able to walk and see everything at DragCon.
Well, I'm sure that you'll have plenty of opportunity to do that, and I know that it's incredible, so I'm just excited that DragCon has gone from drag queens to professional wrestling, and like, eventually I'll get to go down there and see all of the things that I love under one roof, and I can't wait. All right, well, have a good morning, and I will talk to you later, beautiful.
Well, you're a sweetheart. I feel like I've been blessed after like all this stuff, like good people attract more other good people.
Exactly. So. I agree with that.
I feel lucky. Well, thank you for talking to me. You've been such an angel.
Thank you. And we'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
We better.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, y'all. This is Bob the Drag Queen. You are listening to Party Style Radio with Tolio Del Mar and Pearl. Listen up, girl.
All right, everybody, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Poyet Almar, your co-host. We just heard from 5-time WWE Women's Champion Melina. Catch her this weekend, the 29th, at RuPaul's Drag Con in Los Angeles. And now we are going to take you directly to another of our amazing interviews, this time with chart-topping singer Andy Bell, one half of Erasure. They have been making hits since the 80s, and the duo will return in May with a brand new CD and with their single to follow shortly after its release. Andy and I have known each other for a number of years, and he's always been an absolute favorite of mine to talk to. So please welcome at this time to Party Foul Radio the incredible talents of Andy Bell, everyone. Well, I'm so glad that you agreed to talk. One of the things about this podcast that we've been doing it for a little over a year, and it has allowed us the opportunity to really present some incredible artists and performers who are of significance to the LGBT community. And, of course, in so many ways, I really think that you paved the way by being open when people were even far less inclined to do so than they are now in your career.
It's a long time ago, but it's so strange how it just feels so recent, everything, you know, because I don't know, it's because I think it's the same as music. It kind of just becomes part of your DNA, and I always had a really fantastic time when we went to San Francisco, like in probably about 1986 or 87, I suppose, and I was just taken under the wing of like a group of people, you know, so I kind of really felt at home from day one, really, going there.
Well, people say that San Francisco is very European in its feel, and I don't know because I've actually never been to Europe, but so.
Yeah. It is quite. I think it's kind of the people's attitudes, like of just live and let live, you know, because it's such a mixture of people, you know, Irish immigrants and people from Japan, and all different places, you know, and Latinos. It's pretty much a melting pot. I mean, you come to London and you're the only white person walking down the street, you know.
Of course, you only get that sort of on the coastal cities, because if you go to the middle of our country, you could be the only person of color walking down the street. You know what I mean? So.
Sure. Yeah. I've always gravitated towards ports, and that's probably the reason.
For me, living here was such a cultural awakening in so many ways. You know, it wasn't just that I came here as a young gay man to sort of explore that, but I moved here from Cleveland, so we didn't get a lot of diversity there, so it was very eye-opening, you know what I mean? Such an enriching experience.
Yeah, I think it's quite strange, you know, like, I mean, when I was growing up, our town was quite small. It was a town called Peterborough, and it wasn't really that cosmopolitan, but all you wanted to do, you know, when I had girlfriends, you know, one of my first girlfriends, she was Indian, and then one of my first boyfriends was Indian, and you just wanted a taste of the exotic, you know, not just the people that you see every day, you know, and that's one thing that I can't understand with, like, people that, I don't know, just want, you know, like, all white societies and things like that, or segregation. It just seems to me, like, so ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, I remember my mom, who is quite a hoot, by the way, Andy.
Yeah.
she said to me very early on when I was, like, not long after I'd come out, she said, why do so many gay couples look alike? You know, like, why do they actually look alike?
Yeah.
And I said, I think it's narcissism, Mom. You know, I think they're like, oh, yeah. I'm so hot, yeah. I'd fuck me. Would you fuck me? I'd totally fuck me. You know, like...
Yeah, she has a point, definitely. You know, I always do double takes when I see kind of look-alike couples, you know.
Well, of course, it's never been me, because I always am drawn to exactly what you said, like somebody so different than me, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
The opposite. And I think what happens as well is I think you become attracted to people, or it just naturally happens that you meet your... somebody that's opposite in maybe in your opinions, in your personality, you know, and it's not just physical, it's like all other aspects, because otherwise you wouldn't learn anything about yourself, would you, you know?
Yeah, I 100% agree with that, because I like people who can challenge my way of thinking, and even with my friends, you know what I mean? Like, I'm really drawn to, I have this incredibly diverse group of friends, and we can educate each other and come together on, you know, common ideas and stuff, but there's so much to be learned from people who are not like ourselves.
Yeah, and also sometimes, you know, when you, it's that thing of, you just have to, like, agree to disagree, because sometimes you can't, there are some kind of barriers that you just can't cross, can you? You know, if somebody has a differing opinion to you, or they're of a different political persuasion, it doesn't mean that they can't, you know, they don't have to be your friends just because you don't agree with their politics. You know, I think that's what we need to do more of.
Absolutely. I mentioned that you, in many ways, paved like a path for people to be out as performers and artists. And we're seeing more of that individuals who claim their sexuality pretty early in their career, as opposed to a little bit later. But is there the perception from people within the industry that being open about your sexuality can still hinder your opportunities for widespread success?
Yeah, I think it's always, I think it's kind of always been like that. And I think it still is like that to a certain extent. I mean, you know, to be honest, I don't keep up with modern pop, and you read about the odd person that's come out and stuff like that. And like, for me, like when they're, you know, when they're really young, I just feel for them so much, you know, because I just think, well, because I know how many, not necessarily knockbacks you can have, but just how tough the industry is, you know. And I think now it's almost seen as like a bit of a career move in the first place, because it kind of guarantees headlines. But then it seems like after your 5 minutes, it's a bit kind of hushed up again, you know, because I think always, especially on these kind of talent shows and things as well, it's definitely this rule of, in the music business, that you're appealing to a teenage female audience.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a boy kind of thing, you know, so, and I mean, they want the maximum amount of people possible to go and buy your records. So I think they just feel like if you're a young gay man coming out, there are going to be less gay men available to kind of go and buy your records. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, I was in the car with my best friend recently, and we were listening to a mix of music that he had. And one of the songs, of course, was by Adam Lambert. And then the next song came on, and it was a song that had been a huge, like, top 10 hit, but initially I thought it was Adam Lambert. And then I realized, you know what, Adam is so talented, and he could sing any of this music, but I think that his persona and his openness with his sexuality has limited his ability to appeal to the masses.
Yeah, I think it's a shame, you know, still that, you know, that you have to make a point about it, that we still have to make a point about it, and then immediately that you make a point about it, you're labelled a gay singer, you know, and nobody, I mean, none of the other artists are labelled straight singers, you know, or heterosexual singers. We just kind of like have this label that stays with you the whole time. And I think also people, you know, within the music industry don't realise how, you know, music is for everybody. It doesn't matter, like, who, just because you're a gay person singing a song doesn't mean it's only going to appeal to, like, lesbians and gay men, you know. It's ridiculous.
It kind of defies the whole concept of music to begin with, because what makes an incredible song is that it speaks in a universal fashion to all people.
Yeah.
I think of your early music, first the stuff that has become iconic and we still hear to this very day, and it spoke to all people. It doesn't.
Yeah.
The messaging is universal.
No, I think as well. I think you definitely pick up. It's probably going to. I'm going to disagree with myself now, but you know, you pick up on someone's DNA. So look, kind of like from their experience, I think because humans are kind of somewhat sensitive. You know, you say, for instance, Dusty Springfield. I don't know if like a lesbian woman would have heard certain intonations or just the kind of like the feeling coming out of her voice that they might have related somehow in some aspects to just how she sounded or just her kind of like heartache. I'm not sure, you know, and it doesn't really matter on the subject matter that she's singing about, you know.
Yeah, but think about very current things like Sam Smith. When he sings I'm Not the Only One,
yeah,
I think that certainly gay men might see him and think to themselves what we think, you know, our gaydar goes off or whatever. But the appeal and heartache of that song is as universal as if Adele had sung it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
So, I mean, sometimes I wonder, and the thing about Sam Smith, for example, is he was in the midst of this huge success, and then he came out, and I'm waiting to see if he is allowed the opportunity to
see what happens. Yeah. It does become very closed. I mean, the channels do become closed.
It's one of those things where he's had this tremendous moment, and I'm waiting to see if he is given the same kind of opportunity for a follow-up that, again, because I really compare his music to Adele, and I compare him in many ways to Adele, so it's like, is he going to be allowed the same opportunity that Adele was? Or was that his moment, and now he is a gay artist?
Right, yeah. I think also with musicians, it's kind of like horses, really, you know, and people kind of like bet on them, and it's like they want the maximum exposure possible, you know, the A&R people and the people that are kind of in charge of their careers, you know, they want the maximum amount of exposure possible, and I think sometimes they kind of, the bets are off, or they hedge their bets, you know, so it'll be interesting to see what happens to Sam.
Now, you have had tremendous success both in a group and as a solo artist. And I'm wondering for you, is it hard to continue finding your musical identity like 30 years into a career, expanding it?
I don't know, really. I mean, I just love music, you know, and, you know, I love like Madonna and Adele and Rihanna and Beyonce, you know, it's all mostly female artists that I like.
Shocking.
Pardon?
I said shocking. A gay man only likes female vocalists.
And I've never really been a person that's been into look changes. You know, like these people that have to change their look every 5 minutes. I kind of like, for me, it gets sort of tiresome. And I kind of, and to me, I kind of feel like, I don't know, I mean, it is comparing, but the more classical artists like Elvis, and I know it was a different time then, but hardly ever change their looks, maybe 3 or 4 times. And I know that time has sped up and it's much more commercial now, and you have to keep the young people interested and stuff like that. But I've always just felt like, to me, that's secondary, you know. So I mean, it's hard for me to escape electronic music because I love it so much. And, you know, once people hear synths plus my voice, that it kind of almost equals erasure. So it's hard for me to escape, I wouldn't say confines of erasure, but for me to kind of like do something different, you know, would have to be quite radical. I mean, that's why I've really enjoyed doing the Torsten project. But I mean, I would like to do maybe like an orchestral record or maybe 1940s type torch songs, but it is quite hard to kind of like appeal to a new audience or just get it out in the media, really. You know, they kind of like always harp back to you being an 80s star and things like that. You know, you kind of get stuck in a time warp.
Yeah, I could totally imagine that. Of course, I am one of those individuals who is always looking for the newest music, and
realize.
A lot of that for me means paying very close attention to what's happening in the UK, because I think that so much of what's coming out of the UK right now makes its way over to the US. And I saw this show maybe 2 weeks ago that was Starley, who's from Australia.
Right.
Zara Larsson and Clean Bandit. And it was a tremendous show. Oh my gosh, Andy, it was so good. And
wow, was it them performing live or?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
brilliant.
They are amazing. And when I was there, I turned to my friend and I said, you know who I would love to see or hear on a record with Clean Bandit is Andy Bell, because I think your voice would go so well with them. And it's orchestral yet electronic. And I just,
wow.
I think that you guys would be incredible together.
Great. So they're called Clean Bandit or Clear Bandit?
Clean Bandit. You've never heard of Clean Bandit?
No, I haven't, hun. I'm honestly, I live in my bubble. I really do.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you need to check out Clean Bandit because they're an electronic group.
Right.
And they do music, synthesizers, and all of that. But when they play 100% live instruments. And you...
Right.
Oh, my God. You need to check them out, Andy. I can't believe I've educated you about
Clean Bandit. I will do. Thank you for the recommendation.
It's incredible because I think that... I mean, when you hear them live, they're doing dance music. But so often... And you know this from your own shows. There's like a person on a keyboard, and then the vocalist, and all of this. But but they had live violins and live percussion. It was incredible, and I just think your voice would meld so well with them.
Oh, great! I mean, there is that aspect to you know, when you are performing in a synth band, especially a duo. You know, the music's programmed and stuff. I mean, sometimes I do feel like a bit like a monkey on a barrel organ. You know, so, I mean, thankfully Vince reprograms the music every time, so it's fresh now. But there was a time when it was you just felt like you were going through the motions over and over again. You know. I mean, the very few times that I've had the chance to perform with live musicians, I've always really, really enjoyed it, you know. But it's been so few that I haven't really been able to develop, what do you call it, an improvisational style.
Uh-huh. I think that you should also, this is just me throwing out ideas.
Yeah.
The San Francisco Symphony often pairs with pop stars and produces these incredible concert series where they have a live vocalist on stage while they do live orchestration. And with your voice, I mean, because the one thing I would say about someone with your kind of vocal range is that you're not limited to songs that would be considered traditionally male. You know what I mean? Because you have that high range. And and I just think that you guys could produce. And, of course, you said you already love San Francisco, so why not?
Yeah. I mean, for me, honestly, that would be a dream, and I'm really loving as well, exploring my lower range as well now. I mean, obviously, you know, as you get older, it matures and stuff like that. But I'm really loving exploring my lower range, so it would be interesting to. I mean, look, a lot of the time when I was in Spain, like, you know, on holidays and stuff at home, I have on the jukebox Mahalia Jackson.
Uh-huh.
And I could sing along to her and almost just blend in with her and kind of, like, imitate her, you know. I mean, I'd just love to kind of, like, get that kind of gospel vibration going in the voice somehow, you know.
Well, I think it's very interesting because a lot of the things that, well, I wouldn't say exactly new or contemporary at the moment in British music, but within the last 5 years have been really influenced by American gospel, American soul. You know, I think of artists like even when Adele first came out or Duffy and many others, they felt very much like a throwback to a bygone era of American pop music.
I think Amy Winehouse definitely paved the way for like so many of those female singers, you know.
Truly.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So when this interview comes out, I'm going to tag the San Francisco Symphony and tell them that you would love to do that. So
thank you.
Now, I know that rumor has it, certainly, that you are currently working on a brand new album. So I want to know details.
That's all done. It's all done and polished. And I've got 5 hours worth of interviews tomorrow and another chat show in the evening. So, yeah, that's all done. I mean, we're just waiting for it to come out, really. And the, I know the single was pushed back because there's just so much stuff coming out, you know. And we have one a radio show here in the UK towards the end of May, which is kind of doing live stuff, you know. So I think they're just waiting for that to happen. But it was a much more less poppy record, I suppose, and a bit more serious.
Okay.
Yeah, I think because of the kind of current political climate, and here with Brexit in the UK and Trump in the US, it was kind of like, you know, I felt quite estranged from the kind of the human race and a bit disappointed in them, you know, and just thinking like how people are so sheep-like and they just follow orders and it's, we just seem to be in the same old routine going round and round again, you know, and getting ready for war and all this stuff. And I just wish people would just wake up a bit, you know. But there's definitely a movement going on. I mean, you read all kinds of stuff on the internet. You know, I love, what's it called? Cosmic Evolution or something like that. Yeah, it's just, the record is kind of a reflection of Vince and my moods, really, you know, from over the past 6 months, I suppose.
One of those things you mentioned that you guys are very much associated with electronic dance music and pop music. And yeah. How do you make the jump from that to including political themes and political opinions in music of that nature?
Right. I think what happened, I think because we did, because the last record, The Violet Flame, was like a pure straight down the line dance album, I think I've been kind of feeling a bit frustrated over the past year and a half and thinking like, because pop is so young, it's such a young person's game now, and I just hate the, it kind of gets more and more commercial the whole time, you know. Of course I love reading about it, I love the gossip magazines and things like that, but I would hate to live my life under that kind of spotlight. But you know, thankfully we've always been very much under the radar. But I don't know, I think after a while you just think, not that you reject the pop sensibility, but you just think like you want to do something that's relevant to you, you know, and you want to write about something that you care about and hopefully that other people will care about, because you just feel like people are so easily manipulated just by an image, you know, and you just kind of want to hopefully make people realize that what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, without getting too heavy about stuff, you know.
It's interesting. I like the first thing that came to mind when you talk about this is, for example, Katy Perry just talked about her new record that's coming up, and she said that she feels an obligation to include, even if it's in a pop sensible way, messages about the political climate today because of the fact that she would not feel authentic if she just put out love songs or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that displays growth in an artistic sense because, you know, there's a desire to have mainstream success, but there's also a desire to use the platform that you've been granted for social advances or making people think.
I just think, like, thank God, you know, I just think, thank God that you're... consciousness has been pricked, you know.
Right.
Say thank God for that, you know.
It's, I definitely think, and of course, I believe that with most artists, as they have felt comfortable in their success, or they feel that their place in history or whatever is secured, and the desire to, you know, put out something that's simply going to hit the charts or whatever is the motivation like that is, that it becomes something where they realize that, you know, when you have success, you have the opportunity, you're given a platform and you're given an audience that will listen to a little bit of a message. And I think that for many people, especially of the generation that you came from, I'm a slightly younger, but where politics was part of pop music, where politics just being out was a political statement, all of these things, I think that the desire to include some of that as you progress is probably very natural.
Yes, I think so too. You know, it's I mean, I think after a while, you just kind of like, I don't know, the whole pop thing just becomes facile in some ways, you know. I mean, you love it. I love it. I'm a fan, and I love kind of like candy floss pop and all that sort of stuff. But I think after a while, you just want to satisfy yourself, you know.
Right. Absolutely. And I think that, yeah. I think that sometimes with artists, we see that in many different ways. Sometimes it yeah. is their music takes a political slant. And other times I think that we see artists who, for example, will release one of those albums where it's like American standard covers because they're like, this is the music I love. Yeah. And at this point, I don't care if it's going to be my best selling album. I just want to do sure. what I love.
Yeah, sure.
But, and then I think on the flip side of that, we see artists. I was just right before this interview listening to the brand new Lady Gaga song.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, this is the most. It's cute. It's
yeah.
It, but it's so commercial. It sounds like every other pop song. And it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, this is an artist who has veered so far into her art that now she's got to do something truly innocuous to try to reclaim her place in pop culture.
Yeah.
So
I hear you. Yeah, it might be. I mean, it's such a kind of a trap, really. You know, the whole thing. It's because I'm sure, you know, she definitely wised up, and you kind of like, you just know how the game is played and how the industry is. And, you know, I don't blame her for kind of like, you know, wanting to be back in the race and stuff like that, because she still, I mean, she uses her voice outside of the music, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things I saw, oh my gosh, I saw her labeled by Billboard magazine as, quote, already a nostalgia act. And I thought,
oh gosh, yeah.
I'm like, this pop industry is ruthless.
I know, they are. I think there's only one industry that's more ruthless, and that's politics, you know. But kind of politics just does come into the music, you know. You don't realize it's all these, you know, it's like anything else. It's like these huge corporations behind it, you know, and weapons manufacturers and, you know, BAE systems and all kinds of things. You have no idea. So, I think once you... I think if you're somebody that kind of, like, rocks the status quo, you know, they're going to be quite wary of you, you know?
Yeah, I'm hopeful that Lady Gaga's career will be reignited to the degree that she's hoping, because she really truly does advocate for the LGBTQ community in ways that most pop artists would never. And that's...
Yeah, I mean, she deserves it, and she's sincere, and she's genuine, and she has an honest, a true talent. She really does, you know.
Wildly, immensely. I had the opportunity to work with her several times in person early in her career, and I was blown away by the degree of actual legitimate talent a woman making, at that time, simple pop music I applaud her for that.
Me too. I mean, I've, you know, when you think about, you know, evolution and stuff as well, and I've, you know, and I mean, I'm very grateful. I love, you know, I'm glad that I've been honest in my career, and we came out in the mid 80s and stuff like that. But now I can't, young people really blow me away, because I just think they're so kind of like, much more forward than we were, you know. I think we've, you know, there were some people you kind of like ahead of your time, born ahead of your time, but I think the young people now are much more willing to stand up for what they believe in and stuff like that, and they see no difference between, you know, if you're a girl or a boy, or you sleep with this person or that person, you know. And I mean, for me, the kind of like the scariest thing is, like, it's the same with little children. They have no prejudices whatsoever. It's only when you just get this kind of like these campaigns that go over and over and over and trying to kind of influence their opinions and stuff, you know, and change their minds about stuff, that's when it becomes dangerous, you know.
Absolutely. You know, yesterday I was describing to someone, I have two nephews, Andy, and like They're both in high school. One is 14 and one is 15. And the 15-year-old is the popular kid in school. You know, he's a jock. He plays football. And a while back, I was having a conversation with him, and I said, you know, Tyson, you are the kind of young man who, quite honestly, made my life miserable when I was in school. And my hope is that having grown up with a gay uncle, you know, a drag queen is an uncle, and you accept and you love all these things about me, that when somebody speaks up and says something awful about someone who you think is like me, that you'll say something. And I really believe that that is happening more and more with the younger generation. I think it's so optimistic for the future for gay youth and queer youth.
Yeah, me too, hon. I totally agree with you. I mean, I have my my current husband, he has two nephews, and they're brought up very proper, you know, like very kind of Ivy League-ish. And you can just see they love having a gay uncles, you know, they love it. And so I think to them it's kind of like really trendy and sort of like I suppose it's something different from the other kids, but, you know, they really get it, and we have a great laugh with them as well, you know.
Well, here is my nephew who, like I said, he's that jock and he's the cool kid, and I was never that. It took me much later in life to just embrace who I was and realize that I don't need somebody else to tell me I'm the cool kid if I decide I'm the cool kid.
Not so.
And, you know, he comments on my Instagram photos and, like, on my... That's my uncle, you know, and... And he's taken my mom out, and he they'll be at the mall or something or shopping, and he'll say, ooh, I think that this necklace would be perfect for, you know, for his drag. And I mean, it's like a very different day and age, and I'm really glad to see that.
Yeah, me too.
Now, you mentioned your new husband, and I would imagine that to some degree, being a public persona makes dating and meeting people who are authentic in their interests a little more difficult.
Right. For me, it's never been a problem that much. I think you kind of like, I mean, I've been lucky, you know, and I've always seemed to have had this kind of intuitive sort of like radar with people, you know, and I know if someone's genuine or not, you know, and I mean, obviously you miss things, but, you know, I've often felt like, you know, if you walk into a room and, like, I don't know, somebody's talking about you or whatever, you're not even, they're not looking at you or whatever, you just feel it.
Right.
You know, so I think it's the same way. It's the same way with choosing partners. You know, I mean, Paul, my dear Paul, who I lost 5 years ago, you know, Stephen came along just when Paul was dying, at the kind of like really the right moment. And to be honest, I wasn't even looking for someone new in my life, you know. And he came along and really, really helped me. He's a year younger than I am. I mean, when I met Paul and when I met Stephen, I had this nearly almost exactly the same thought, which was, who's this strange person? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of like really intrigued by them, you know.
It's one of those things, I think, that, I don't know, like, I would never, you can't compare the degree of exposure that you have to what I have, but even here, like, people know you only as one thing, and so just meeting somebody who is open to learning more about you is sometimes, I think that, honest to God, I think whether you're a CPA or a person who manages a Starbucks, people see you and put you in a box, but...
Yeah, sure, yeah. I mean, I've there used to be this nightclub called Trade in the UK. It was quite famous. It was the first kind of 24-hour license, so it used to go all weekend. And I used to go there sometimes. It was very mixed, you know, and one time I remember being in the coat check line, and this guy kind of turned around to me, and he goes, oh, it's you, I hate you. You know, and I said, like, why would you say that? Why do you hate me? And I says, oh, because you're so camp and blah 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 blah. I said, well, you're in a gay club, Nate. You know. So it's right what you said about people putting you in boxes just because of how they've perceived you, like from watching you on videos or whatever. You know.
Well, I think that for a person who would say that to a complete stranger, first of all, I think they're an awful person, and they clearly, I think that for some people, the idea that you've had success or you've had some fame and you've had exposure, they take that as an opportunity to like burst your bubble or whatever, you know, kind of whatever thing. And there's some kind of innate joy that they get, this twisted joy of doing that. But
that all comes from self-hate.
Absolutely.
I think every single homophobic person is gay. They are. There's no other explanation. Why would you do that?
Yeah, I find that one of the things that has become increasingly clear in our society is that people who are genuinely secure in who they are do not care who you are. It does not affect them or does not impact them in any capacity.
No, and why would you have to put another person down? For what? Just to make yourself look bigger. So you're obviously insecure.
Yeah, there's something at play there. I do believe that 100%. Because if somebody, no matter who they are, finds a person attractive, you say thank you, and that's it. You don't need to, I would never, you know, why does it matter?
No. You see, for me, that also comes down to even thoughts. You know, if you can't really even think a bad thing about somebody because, you know, that karma will come back and bite you.
Yeah, I do not understand it. But, you know, one of the things that you kind of alluded to earlier in our conversation was that this whole idea of fame, and you've always said that you felt on the periphery. Have there ever been I mean, of course, as a public persona and as a musician, being on the periphery of fame can be a detraction because you want the level of success and exposure that's going to push people's awareness of your work. But at the same time, one can only imagine that there has to be on some level a degree of appreciation that you were never under the microscope quite the way that other people have been.
You know, definitely. I mean, we went through a period, like especially here in the UK, and I suppose it came to a crescendo in the 1990s when we were always on the TV all the time, and you know, and once we had the ABBA EP came out, that was in 1992. It was like, honestly, we didn't have the internet then, like or barely. So, you know, you could walk down the street, but I still had this feeling that the whole street was staring at you and stuff. You know, and I just said, God, please, can you switch it off? And boy, did he switch it off. You know, but that took me a long time to adjust to, from almost like overnight, from having this full-on attention to almost nothing at all, you know. And I think I think that's something that's to do with your own learning humility and kind of like and learning the kind of, you know, fame doesn't answer any questions for you at all, you know. And it's really not that's good for your ego, really, because it's fake and false. You know, I mean, people can be, okay, it's nice to have your talents appreciated, but, I mean, I think originally I wanted to be famous because I was so shy. You know, then you have people coming up to you rather than you having to initiate a conversation, you know. But I just love the kind of wiseness that it brings. You know, I see it in other artists when you've had to deal with that. Because, again, it's almost like a rejection thing all over again, you know, which was the kind of, that was the whole point in the first place, you know.
Right. I remember you telling me during one of our early conversations that when you were young, you were so painfully shy, and then all of a sudden you had this tremendous exposure, and it was such a rude awakening to you to be feel yourself as desirable or...
Right.
I mean, did you ever become an asshole, Andy? That's what I'm getting at. Did you ever become an asshole as a result of that?
I'm sure I have been to some people, you know, but, I mean, it takes really an awful lot for me to get riled. you know, I think I am very patient, you know, and one of my things has been never to kind of turn anybody away, you know, if they want an autograph or whatever, to the extent that, you know, to your own detriment, almost, you know. But I don't know. I mean, I've always kind of been pretty much a wallflower, you know, unless you go out and get wasted or whatever. You know, I've always been pretty much hiding away in the corner, and still, even so, you know, I mean, usually, like, when we're on tour and stuff like that, I end up in the DJ booth, you know.
It's safe there.
Yeah.
You know, my friend Michael Shermer was actually, I posted on Facebook that I was going to be speaking with you today, and
yeah.
He said, oh my God, in 1986, so we're going back a little ways,
yeah.
In fact, quite a ways, he yeah. said, in 1986, I met him, and he was the nicest person, and he said that you fancied his DJ friend, and gave them tickets, and it must be rewarding to know that you have had a career that has allowed you opportunities like that to make individual impacts on people who years and years later, decades in fact in this case, remember you fondly for a personal interaction though.
Oh, no, it's really lovely. I mean, to be honest, that is one of my favorite things. One of my favorite things is that personal interaction and just like, you know, just hanging out with someone for like a few hours. And I think, you know, I love going around to people's houses, you know, when the clubs are closed and things. And, you know, I've been to like car rides and all sorts of things, you know. I might not remember who the people are like a month down the line or so, because you meet so many people, and I was probably pretty blotto at that time, but you know, I really do, it sounds corny, but just cherish the moment, you know.
Well, I think that doesn't, I mean I suppose it sounds corny, but I think that, you know, I think that if you put aside that, I think some people are driven strictly by fame, right?
Yeah,
I think that,
yeah, yeah.
I think that some people are driven strictly by fame, but at the heart of most performers is that artistic idea that, you know, whether your yeah. song was a number one single or it yeah. was just somebody else's individual favorite song that they've heard at a time or whatever. It's that desire to make an impact on people and to know that you've had a lasting impression as a person, you know?
Yeah, I suppose it's just like anybody else, you know, you're just a communicator, a storyteller or whatever. And you're just like a gathering of people being around and you're all sharing your experiences, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I firmly believe that in music, more than any other medium, it is, you know, the fame comes and goes, but the memories that are associated with music are eternal. You know, you hear a song and you remember specific incidences or a time in your life. And I think that, you know, as a musician, you've invariably had that impact on people. They hear your songs and they know exactly where they were, or they remember the time they saw you in concert. For God's sake, I saw you in concert 7 years ago and I was blown away, and like that was such a memorable night, you know what I mean?
It's lovely. I suppose it's like hearing a painting or something, I don't know, or smelling a perfume or something like that, you know, you just remember where, you know, how you were feeling at that particular time when you, I don't know, at the concert or when you heard the song or whatever, you know.
Now, when is the new album coming out?
The new album is, I know it's coming out in the UK on the 19th of May. So, usually in the US it's a couple of days afterwards, but I'm not quite sure. But now it's kind of universal, isn't it, when something comes out? I think it's...
It sort of almost is.
Yeah, I think so. So, it just depends on which formats and things, because, you know, our fans still like to buy hard copy, you know, the fans that we have. So, we don't really do that many digital downloads and things like that. So yeah, it depends on the distribution and stuff like that in the US, but I'm sure it'll be in some stores in some places. Otherwise you can get it online. But
and when does the single drop? You said it got pushed back, but
yes, that's coming out now, strangely, in June after the album for some reason. But I think it's probably because we're doing three shows at the very end of May as Erasure, and then we're supporting Robbie Williams here in Europe through 3 months, like 27 shows. So these are going to be kind of like stadiums, but we're the support act, so we only have to do 45 minutes each night. So I'm quite relieved about that. But it's, you know, it's great exposure for us.
And he's another one. He was so huge, and then he came out, and then
he didn't really come out. He hasn't come out. He's like married with a baby, but I think he's bi, though. I think he's one of those sort of plays around people.
Well, you know what? Good for him. Good for him. I just remember that there was that time in the 90s, and he was like the hottest thing. And like, I mean, and I'm not talking just musically, honey. He was the hottest thing. He was so smoking hot. Good God.
Like, yeah.
I can imagine anyone and everyone wanting to get a piece of that. So.
Right.
Sorry. I'm fanning the flames a little bit, but girl, it's like. Yeah. So. Oh, well, I'm really grateful that you took time to talk to me. I always love talking to you. I find you to just be not just iconic musically, but just such a genuinely wonderful and lovely individual, really.
Well, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed our conversation again, and long may we prosper.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, and have a great day.
You're welcome, hon. You too. Okay. See you soon.
Hey, this is Delta Work, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl, brought to you by Left Magazine.
Girl, you better work.
Hi, this is Andy Bell from Erasure. Please listen out for our new album. It's called World Be Gone, and we'll be out very soon.
And we're back, you guys, with more Party Foul Radio. This is the wrap-up of episode 63, girl. That was Andy Bell of Erasure telling us all about his upcoming new album. Well, Erasure's upcoming new album. And, girl, he said that one of his dreams would be to sing for the San Francisco Symphony. And I sure am going to tag them and, like, be like, come on.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, the whole symphony, he, you know, performing. And then his voice is so gorgeous. He can do any kind of music. So how sick would that be? All right, you guys. Remember, if you are in Los Angeles this weekend, it may be too late. But, girl, get your ass down to DragCon.
Right.
And
Other than that, you guys, don't forget to check out our sponsors.
Oh, yes, please. Thank you, Pearl, for bringing us back to the sponsors, bitch.
Right. Go check out Daddy's Barbershop if you live in San Francisco on
19th of Castro, girl. Get your hair did.
And then go check out Swiss Navy Lube.
Yes.
To get your lubes and things. Get you all slippery and.
Yes, honey. Slippery when wet, bitch. You better get up in there, Swiss Navy.
Everything, girl.
Of course, we are really excited. I didn't even tell Pearl this. GuideToGay.com, which is Australia's number one LGBT information website, has asked us for a banner ad so that they can promote our podcast, girl.
All right, girl. Come on, banner ad.
They're going to put it on their homepage, bitch. We're going to be getting some Australian love. You guys go over to GuideToGay.com, pick up some information about what's going on down in Australia if you're down that way.
And GuideToGay.com, don't forget, you can always fly us out there, but we are ready.
We are ready. We'll just have to pack an entire suitcase full of Swiss Navy lube since we can't actually take it onto the plane with us as a carry-on.
We'll send it.
Yes. And, of course, if you're in San Francisco, check out Left Magazine, you guys, at liveleft.com.
Well, you could do that anywhere, girl.
Right. Well, if you're in San Francisco, pick up your... She's right. Pearl is right again. Chalk one up for Pearl. That's the second time this episode I said she was right. So, if you are in San Francisco, pick up your copy of Left Magazine. If you bump into Jeff Caluzzi or David Helton, tell them that Poyo and Pearl sent you, or go over to liveleft.com. Oh, those are our sponsor moments, you guys. Meanwhile, next episode, and this is your homework, besides going to guidetogay.com and liveleft.com and getting your haircut at Daddy's and
getting
your slippery on with Swiss Navy lube. Guys, go check out this new single. It's called Honor. It's by DJ Cassidy featuring Grace and Lil Yachty. It's a banging jam. They sound so good together. And on next episode, we will be joined by DJ Cassidy talking all about it. Girl, how many people can say that they were 18 years old and got discovered at a nightclub by Sean Combs, girl? He was just there and like
her. Puff Daddy.
Yeah, it's Puff Daddy.
Puff Daddy?
Yeah. Go check it out because he's worked with everybody from Jessie J and Robin
Everybody
Thicke,
girl.
Alex Newell.
Kanye West trifling ass.
So he's worked with everybody. Go check him out. Meanwhile, we're going to have him on with us for a great 30-minute interview next week. Huh. That brings us to a conclusion, you guys. I don't think there's anything else to talk about, bitch.
Girl, that's it. What are you doing this weekend?
Girl, I'm trying to get through today first to figure out what I'm doing this weekend.
All right, you guys. We'll tune in next week for more Party Foul Radio. Jesus, girl.
Until then, I'm Poet Omar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
Bye, Tease. It's so fun.